Hi, this is David Orlovsky, and welcome to the Rabbi Orlovsky Show. Whether you're watching with our friends over at Turning Time, or whether you watch or listen to your podcast, as always, we're happy to have you along. And for those of you who happen to watch on YouTube platform, we have reached 2,000 subscribers, which means that if I was to run ads, I could get 1/1,000th of a penny for every view. So I'm on my way. As the old joke goes, if I had Rothschild's money, I'd have more money than Rothschild because I could still give bar mitzvah lessons. Anyway, so... On this, I ain't going to retire, but Baruch Hashem, I also want to give a quick mention that I'm on Coming to America, yeah, and I will be there at the end of February, and the last Shabbos in February, I will be in Los Angeles doing a Shabbos for Rabbi Summers in Anshe Shalom. The next Shabbos, I will be at the Project Inspire Convention. I will be speaking in Baltimore. I will be posting my schedule as more events fill in. But anybody who would like to hire me or just would like to, sponsor some kind of an event, I don't have any Shabbosim left. But if you want to do a weekday speech or a lunch and learn or a breakfast event, or it could even be something without food, I suppose. I don't know how that would work, but I guess, we are available. So, please be in contact through the usual suspects, my website, RabbiOrlovsky.com, and say, yes, I would like Rabbi Orlovsky to come and speak, or I just want to see him long enough to hand him an envelope of an obscene amount of money, because I've just been carrying it in my pocket all this time and I wasn't sure how to get it there because of the authorities. So, Rico, you know who I'm talking to, eh? And we have a special sponsor this week. It's sponsored anonymously. I would like to sponsor this upcoming episode for the 3rd of Shvat in honor of Rabbi Orlovsky's birthday. We pay attention. My wife and I are avid listeners and so appreciate the Torah, Hashkafa, warmth, humor, and pop culture references. I am guilty as charged. In your weekly shows, may you continue to spread your unique brand of Torah teaching. Absolutely, it is a unique brand. There's nothing like it. Yeah. Also, the schus for Hatzlocha and Oren Yonim, giving a bracha on your birthday, will have extra power. Right back at you. Vitz Hashem, everyone should have also bracha, whatever koyach HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives me to be able to give bracha, besides the fact that I'm a Kohen, so I do this professionally. So absolutely, everybody should have b'mevarach and take all of the Kedusha and all the wonderful things that we can possibly give over, and you should have it in your lives. Okay, thank you so much for keeping things going. And we are winding down our Shabbos experience. We talked about Malacha, we talked about the concept of Shabbos, we talked about, Asays, we talked about Onik Shabbos, we did some recipes, we did Zmiros. I got a lot of reaction on the Zmiros. Some people sent me actual Zmiros. We really need to have a follow-up on this because a lot of people... if you remember when I did the two-parter with Ari Goldwag, he said at one point, I'm not a music historian, so I don't know where all these things came from. But, of course, a lot of my listening audience wrote and said what the source were of various Zmiras that we sang, etc. So we have to have a follow-up on the Zmiras one. We'll do that as another musical episode at some point. But so we think about that. So we're coming to the end of Shabbos. And by the end of Shabbos is... Shalosh Shudas. Yeah. It's so interesting. When I ran NCSY, they used to make these salads. We used to buy these tubs of Shalosh Shudas salads. It was from a company called Sally Sherman. And they used to make tuna salad and egg salad and coleslaw and macaroni salad and potato salad. And of course, these were Shalosh Shudas things. So we used to call it because it was Sally Sherman. Sally's was called Sally Shudis. But Sally Shudis, you know, you have these people who are cool people. You know, they like to say Sudat Shlishit, the third male. But that's never been the minhag. The minhag is Shalosh Sudos, you know, Shaloshudis, or Shaloshidis. Yeah. So what's the reason for that? The answer for that is because, especially this time of year. Now, if you do it real Israeli style, where they daven at like 7:30 in the morning, and by, you know, 10 o'clock, they're eating their chalent. You know, so then by 3 o'clock, maybe you're already ready for something else to eat. Yeah. I did a Shabbos Shalavim years ago, and it was a short Shabbos, and they were able to have a milchig shalashudis. So you understand that they finished lunch in time. and they were milching by Echves 3-4 o'clock in the afternoon. So that was quite an accomplishment. They have a schnitzel and chalent early in the morning. Yeah, which is not always easy. Yeah, it's a little hard to digest. In fact, speaking just for a moment about chalent, because I know it's a favorite topic, when I have a very large pot, like one of those big yeshiva pots I bought many years ago when I was making a kiddush, and I've used it ever since. Those are those Israeli aluminum pots, you know. And I make chalent for a kiddush. It's a large chalent, and everybody comments that it's just a great chalent. I mean, when you make a large chalent for it to come out well, it's quite an accomplishment. Because of this, I have certain, you know, friends who, when they make a kiddush, they feel I have to make the chalent. This is what I do. Now, I've taken bits and pieces that I've picked up along the way from various people. Anyway, so our producer, Yisrael, had a baby girl, as I mentioned, and he had a kiddush this past Shabbos. And I was brought in by his father-in-law, my good friend Yitzi Shapiro, to make the chalent. I don't know if he wants this spread around the entire world, but hey, don't talk to me if you expect it to remain private. It reminds me of Crocodile Dundee, where he comes from the Australian outback to New York. And, you know, the woman who's like taking care of him there is like, I have to go see my therapist. I go, what's a therapist? He goes, well, you know, you talk to them about all your problems. He goes, oh, you mean like Mike? He says, what's Mike? Well, Mike runs the general store. And if you're embarrassed about anything, you talk to Mike about it. And then Mike tells everybody else. And then you're not embarrassed anymore. So that's basically me. Yeah. Somebody said to me years ago, he goes, I feel like every now and then when you're speaking, you pause to consider whether what you're about to say is appropriate or not. And regardless, you're going to say it anyway. So there is something to be said for that. Anyway, so I came down to with my big pot. And a lot of it was done for me already. They had all the onions all cut up, and they had the potatoes all peeled and cut up, you know, and they had already soaked the beans, and then everything was all lined up. Brian Regan, who is one of the funniest comedians in modern times, maybe ever times, he says, you know, you ever watch a cooking show? He says, I would cook like that if I had everything in pre-measured bowls on the counter. He goes, well, basically you pour this in and you pour that in, you pour that. Oh, look at that. That was so incredibly easy. He says, I'm going to do a realistic cooking show. I'll be halfway through. Notice when we suddenly discover we're out of eggs. So come with me to the store now as I run out to buy eggs. He says, and after they finish the whole thing, they open the bottom oven and there's one there already. He says, look at this. What was I cooking for? There's one already in the oven. I didn't know that. I could save myself a lot of time. Anyway, so everything was all set up. So I do the onions first, and I don't put in a lot of oil because I don't like an oily chalent. And I sauteing them. Yeah, I add a little salt and pepper. Yeah. And when they're, you know, brown enough. So then I add the beans and the barley, and I mix them all in together so that they get a nice, you know, nice mixture. And then I add my spices, which is salt and kosher salt and pepper and garlic powder and paprika and almost an entire container of the Osim onion soup mix. Those are my spices. Mix it up together. And in fact, I obviously spice liberally, you know. So I take the little cover off when I'm sprinkling it on. And he says, why don't you shake it? I said, no, it's too much. You don't shake for a chalent. That's this size. You know, pour it on, yeah. Okay, and then we mix it all together there. And then Yitzi's beyond me. I'm a simple guy. I put the marrow bones in on the bottom then. It serves as a foundation. But he roasted them first. And we kept digging little wells in to stick the marrow bones all over the bottom. And then I poured in the potatoes. And then I added water. And then he also roasted the flanken. Put it on top. It was all set. Added more water. There was just enough room left at the top for the kishkas, which, of course, my wife has this tremendous kishka. She actually told me recently she got it originally from the Halb cookbook and in 1982 or something. But now my daughter and son-in-law make the kishka. So they were going to send over the kishkas, you know, and I brought it up. And I said, that's it. Bring it to a boil and lower it. Anyway, I see him Friday night, and he says, I forgot to lower it. It was burnt. So I said, I can't believe it. I spent an hour on that challenge. What do you mean it got burnt? He goes, we were busy. I forgot to lower it, you know. I was able to save the meat because the meat was on top. And we took out all the potatoes, and we rinsed them off, you know. And I don't know what the problem is because my son Shlomo bought a smoker, and he keeps smoking all the meat, and I guess people like it when it smells like it's burnt. So I guess, he has a whole machine. Could have just left it on high. Shabbos, you could have gotten that same smoky flavor. Anyway, so when I came to the Kiddush, he says, do you want some chalent? So I said, first of all, I'm not ready to become fleshig because I have to have a cup of coffee and I can only drink my coffee with milk. Second of all, I can't digest chalent. Third of all, this is not chalent. He says, of course it's chalent. He says, no, I made chalent. I don't know what this is, this Frankenstein that you created. This is not chalent. We said, look, it's watery. He goes, I didn't have enough barley because you used up the barley. I said, because I made the chalent. What do you mean I used up the barley? Anyway, I don't know why I felt that was important to share. Oh, yeah, because you have to be able to eat it early enough if you want to be milchig for shalashudis, unless, of course, you're going to just have a parva shalashudis. Yeah. Now, a lot of people just don't want to eat shalashudis at this point, right? Now, assuming, let's say, when I went to America, I lived in America for many years. So you eat lunch at 12, 1 o'clock in the afternoon. Time you're done, go to mincha, it's time for shalashudis. There's not a lot of time. Who wants to sit down and eat? The only time that is as less exciting a meal than that is when Erev Pesach comes out on Shabbos and you have to get up at like 6 o'clock to go and daven shacharis and then run and eat your pita, quickly and then brush yourself off and rinse out your mouth and then walk around the block and then come back and wash again and have another pita. You have to, by the way, plan your pita use well. There was one year that I bought these like Yemenite pitas. There was no way that my kids could finish the amount of pitas that I bought. And I'm sitting there, ripping them up and flushing it down the toilet. It was a cautionary tale for everybody else. Be careful how much you order. And in fact, now people are cool here in Israel, because you can get kosher for Pesach hummus, which of course Ashkenazim don't eat, but it's not chametz, it's kidneys. And so they eat their pita with their hummus to get it down, And then they take the hummus and they double wrap it and stick it in the back of the refrigerator. But because not chametz, it's kidneys, chickpeas. A lot of things that are kidneys are questionable. I'm not an authority on this, but someone told me the reason that we don't eat kasha, which is clearly a vegetable, is because it's called buckwheat. Since it's called wheat, that's the problem. Rabbi Blumenkrantz, who has not been in this world for many years, is still putting out his Pesach guide. Anyway, but I remember when they first discovered quinoa, or quinoa, if you have a reading vocabulary. So he wrote a whole impassioned article how it's perfect for Pesach, and it's really just a vegetable, and it's a super food and high in all kinds of nutrients, and, you know, it's all wonderful, etc., you know, and how everybody should embrace this for Pesach. And, of course, here the Badat said no. Because, you can't make it into flour. It's not stored with the grain. It's too close to kasha. Anyway, so you have to get through there. But on a normal Shabbos, especially if you finish lunch late, especially now that you're singing all the Zmiros after our intense Zmiros experience, and you're singing all of the various Zmiros now that you know the words and tunes to all of them. Somebody wrote, "I wish you would have sung all the Zmiros, all the parts." I could have, I guess, but Like I say, we may do more Zemiras. We'll see. My Hasidic audience, of which I have a surprising amount of Hasidim who listen to this show. There were these Bachrim learning in Bat Yam, in above of Yeshiva, above Baruch Park. Their first language is Yiddish, but they watch the podcast. They came for Shabbos. And somebody else, another chassid I met, he says, you have a big following in Borough Park, so I'm waiting for them to bring me for a Shabbos, you know. The one time I was invited to Kerev Tuni, Kerev Tuni is a Hasidic chizik organization, and you see the ad, and there's like 12 Strimlach and me. So I, of course, gave my shiurim in English. Everybody else gave it in Yiddish, and every now and then I'd be on a panel and everybody else was talking in Yiddish and I was talking in English. And every now and then they would turn to me and they'd go, Rabbi Olovsky, and everybody would laugh. And I was like, okay, don't know what they just said, but I think they're making fun of me. So one guy comes over to me at the beginning. He says, listen, Rabbi Olovsky, don't say any of your usual things. I said, why is that? He says, because I stole them all and said that they're mine. And the people think you're stealing it from me. I said, don't worry. I have enough materia. You don't have to worry. I won't step on your toes there. But we didn't do complaints. I didn't do enough Hasidisha nigunim. So, okay. So we'll have to have a Hasidisha, Zemiris. I'm trying to find Chassid, I'm sure they're out there. The first time I was at the Project Inspired convention, the traveling Hasidim were there. I go around and make a Hasidish or Shabbos in different communities. And they said, we're your Hasidim. I said, oh my gosh. I've had people who said they were my Hasidim, but I never had Hasidim say they're my Hasidim, He says, you're the only one still teaching Hasidus. I said, I'm not teaching Hasidus. It's Slabatka Musa. He says, call it what you want. It's what we call Hasidus. So I guess the Hasidish heart. Who knows? My grandfather came from Vengrov, and whenever I would tell that to Hasidim, they would all laugh. They'd say, the whole town was Ger. You must be a Ger Chassid. Could be. I don't know. I told the story before. I was speaking. My brother was introducing me to somebody, and he says, this is my brother, David Olovsky. He goes, the speaker? So I said, yeah. The funny one? So he says, yeah. He says, the Ger Chassid? I said, what? There is a funny a Ger Chassid who goes around speaking in Yiddish. His name is David Orlovsky. So I realized that David Orlovsky is like Avi Melech. It's a position. It's not the name, Every culture has a David Orlovsky. There's a French one, a Spanish one, David Orlovsky. Oui. Anyway, we'll have to get, if the traveling Hasidim manage to travel to Eretz Yisrael, we'll have them on the podcast. Maybe we'll do something in America. We'll see. We'll see. So much to do. So it is amazing that, you know, here we've been doing this for so many years. And, you know, my wife said to me the other day, goes, I can't believe there are so many topics that you've never spoken about before. Yeah. Full disclosure, I actually prepared for this one because I know what I want to talk about, and I wanted to find out the side behind it. And since I had never really spoken about Shalit Shudis before, so it gave me a little insight. Anyway, so if it's parv, so what do? You serve tuna fish, you serve egg salad, you know, serve. Listen, between me and you, you can serve flatrics. It's okay. You know, once you're going for it, that's what people do when Tisha B'Av comes out on Shabbos. So they have a fleishka shalashudis because they're going to go into the tainis. They want to have something a little better, you know. I know it's not an egg with ashes, but hey, you know, you work with what you got. So, okay. So this is called shalashudis food. Shalishudis, yeah, shalishudis. You know, tuna fish, egg salad, pasta salad, you know, those kind of things. Corn salad, cucumber salad, Waldorf salad, the different kind of salads. Yeah. I think the term salad is misused, frankly. When I was growing up, salad was lettuce, tomato, and cucumber. That was it. If you wanted to add some scallions, okay. Some radishes, maybe. There was no fruit. There was no fruit. There was no nuts. There was no seeds. It was tomato, cucumber, you know, some carrot. I guess you could add some carrot if you wanted, you know. That was it. That was how I grew up with a salad. Now my kids make salad. It's unrecognizable. Crackers in it and fruit in it and all kinds of things, you know. So, I was a simple man with simple tastes. Yeah. But I heard somebody say once, goes, eggs and mayonnaise, how is that a salad? I think it's a good point. Anyway, by the way, if you want to take your egg salad to the next level, add a little relish, either India relish, if you have it, if not hot dog relish, mix it in. It's a nice touch. If you want to do something with your tuna salad, when I'm in a creative mood for my tuna salad, I'll chop up some celery and some onion fine and mix it in beforehand. Yeah. And that's also adds another level. Some people add pickles, you know, God be good to you. Anyway, but you could do all kinds of things. I one time made a pasta tuna salad. For shalashudis, you know, you make the pasta and then you mix in the tuna and all kinds of different things, etc. And I spent days eating that because nobody else would. you know, the simple pasta salad is, of course, you make those, you know, three colored twirly ones, and then you pour some Italian dressing on top of it, you know, and then you cut up some vegetables that go inside of it, you know. I ate that for days also because nobody else would eat it. Anyway, but I digress. So you have your shalashudis, and here in Israel, when you go to like an official like Shabbos someplace, they put out a big gigantic white roll that's like kind of stale by shalashudis already. What I did one time is. I bought rolls for shalashudis and I immediately put them in the freezer. And then I took them out like an hour before shalashudis to defrost so they were still fresh. I do this sometimes with pitas too. So those are definitely some shalashudis options. If it's a later shalashudis, then you want to go for the bagels. Bagels, green cheese, and lox. I'm saying that knowing that Sfardim and Hasidim do not have fish with milk, which means that they have never had a bagel and cream cheese and lox, which frankly, to my mind, calls in to question whether or not people who do that are really Jewish. I'm just saying, I'm just throwing it out there, you know. I have the same problem when people don't eat knedlach. If you don't have matzo balls and matzo brei, then well, Make it out of potato starch. Come on. Come on. Matzo balls. They're called matzo balls. They're made out of matzo. That's what they're supposed to be. But anyway, I get into trouble when I say things like this. But as I mentioned earlier in the podcast, I have no filters. Anyway, 1 second. I'll think first. Okay. Anyway, so, by the way, I've mentioned this beforehand. Yeah. Sof ma'asev machshav tchila. You have to think what makes shalashudas interesting. Yeah. You have to think, what would people want to eat? Yeah. Think about that. Try to put out food. Now, a lot of people just, they're stuffed. Let's be clear. Okay. Achilas gasa is not eating. If you are so stuffed that you can't eat anything else and you eat shalashudas, you're not yotze anyway, because it's not called achila. Achila's gasa is not called achila. That was the story with the brisket rav. After Yom Kippur, he had a piece of cake. He wasn't sure if it was enough for an olam. He had another piece of cake. He still wasn't sure. He had another piece of cake. And then he was afraid that maybe it was achila's gasa and he couldn't make a bracha. There's a line. There's a line beyond which you can no longer eat. Yeah. So therefore, if you know you're going to eat shalashudas, take that into account. So I read you from the Mishnah Berurah. Siman Reish Tzadi Aleph. Yehezayim ma'od l'kayim suda shlishis. Be very careful to keep shalashudas. Zahir ma'od. Says the Mishnah Berurah, "Kadeisa b'Gemara chayiv adam leachol shalosh sudais b'Shabbes, v'as mechuhu akra dechziv yom Moshe, achlu hayom ki Shabbos hayom laHashem hayom lo simsauhu basodeh." Three times it says yom, and therefore it is very important. There's another reason that he brings, as we'll see. V'yafim sova, even if you're full, yochol akayim osai b'kabeh. Have a piece of bread the size of an egg. Vim iya shalo klau le'achol, you're so full that if you eat, you're going to be sick. Eino chayiv l'tzayas atzmo. Okay, so then you don't have to force yourself, says the Mishnah Berurah, because the suda is given as an oneg and not as a tzar. And then he says a very important rule here, that he says, he's quoting the Torah. Leave room to eat shalashudas. That's a chacham. You have to plan it out. And by the way, machlek is in the Gemara. How much is considered the normal amount for a suda? And Rabbi Meir brings a small amount, and he says, because he's talking about Shabbos, because on Shabbos you dafke eat smaller sudas to make sure you can get in shalashudas. So in the summertime, it's not so hard. But in the wintertime, you have to think how I'm going to do it so that I can eat shalashudas. In-laws, the Orbachs, had this brilliant idea. I did not go to the Ofruf because I was in the hospital. I had just had a bypass operation and 10 years ago. And what they did, because it was, you know, January time, is that they had the Suda. They ate the first course. They knocked off a couple of speeches and they benched. And then they went and daven mincha. And then they came back and they had the rest of the suda and shalashudas, the cholent and the, you know, and then all the main courses, etc. And I thought, what a brilliant idea. We did that for my next two daughters, Shabbos, Shabbos brachas. It's brilliant to do, you know, because that's where you can, you know, get in your shalashudas. The problem is that shalashudas ideally should be after mincha ketana. Yeah, so it should be a little later in the day. So you can be yotze that with zainus and peiris. Yeah, so other things you could do. Alternatively, you could wash again. Now, since you basically only had lunch, and this could still be shalashudas, but at least the official shalashudas is done, you know, you save having to get everyone back together and listen to more speeches. That alone, you know. So some people say it's just not a simcha with speeches. Now, I come from a long line of Orlovsky's where we love to speak, you know, at an Orlovsky affair. There are a lot of speeches. People love to talk, and they have a particular gift when it comes to this. One should always bear in mind that I was one of six boys, and I was the quietest in the family. And my brother Jason, Olav Shalom, it used to kill him that I got paid to speak. He says, I'm so much funnier than you. I'm so much better than you. Why do you get paid to speak? I said, Jay, I'm clean. He says, oh, all right. Then I understand. But the Mishnah Berurah references the Gemara in Shabbos. Kuf Yud Ches. Tana Rabbanan. Kama Sudas Chayev Adam Le'echo B'Shabbos Shalosh. Now that answers my original question. Why do we call it Shalosh Sudas instead of Sudas Shlishit? Because especially this time of year, nobody's going to eat a meal now. The fact that you're eating a meal is clearly only to Mekayim Shalashudas. So the fact that you eat at night, okay, that's supper. The fact that you eat during the day, okay, that's lunch. The fact that you eat Shalashudas is only because you want to Mekayim the mitzvah of having three Sudas on Shabbos, right? Rav Chidki Omer Arba? Fine. Omer Shimon ben Pazi, Omer Bishua ben Levi, Mishum ba Kapara. Ko ha Mekayim Shalash Sudas b'Shabbos, Nitzel Mishalash Bahanias. If you eat the three sudas, you will be saved from three disasters. Mechevlo shel Mashiach. Mechevle Mashiach. Yutzalu. Right? So you'll be saved from the sufferings of the Messianic era. Omeidina shel Gehenim. Omeimilchomis Gog Umagog. Mechevle shel Mashiach ksiv hacha yoyim ksiv hasem hinei anochi sholech lechem es Eliyahu hanavi lifnei ba yoyim Hashem. So it's yom. Medina shel Gehenim ksiv hacha yoyim uksiv hasem yom avra hayom hahu. Reference to Gehenim. Melchamez gog umag uksiv hacha yom uksiv hasem ba yom ba gog. So if you eat the Friday night meal, that will protect you from Chevli Mashiach. If you eat the day meal, that will protect you from Gehenna. And if you eat Shalashudas, that will protect you from Gog and Magog. When I sometimes will be having Shalashudas, and I have family members who are not enthusiastic, I said, okay, well, then I guess I'll miss you after Gog and Magog, because I guess you won't be there because you didn't want to eat Shalashudas to protect you from Gog and Magog. Sometimes it works. And the tradition of a true Jewish guilt trip. Sometimes it doesn't, but listen, yeah, you make your best chance. You know, you put your best foot forward. Anyway, so the question is why? And it's very interesting that the Maharal discusses this in two places. One of them is Be'er HaGoyla. Now, Be'er HaGoyla is a work that the Maharal wrote basically to answer up difficult chazal. So it's a chazal that people don't really understand, and you know, people aren't treating seriously, and they think, oh, the chazal was just talking. And he, of course, goes into the amkus and depth of it. And he brings this over there. He also brings it in Netzach Yisrael, where he talks about this concept of the three sudas being able to take care of these things. So let's start at the beginning. If you remember, when we talked about the sudas, we talked about the tefillas of Shabbos. We said that they have three themes. And that's why Shabbos is the only time when there are three separate amidas. Normally, you know, you do the same amida, whether it's a weekday or a yontif, or for that matter, Rosh Hashanah or Yom Kippur, you do the same one for Shachris Mincha Ma'ariv, but not on Shabbos. You have three different ones. And we said, because there are three ideas of Shabbos. There's Shabbos of the past, Shabbos of the present, and Shabbos of the future. Shabbos of the past is Hashem created the world and rested on Shabbos. And so on Shabbos, by us resting, by us not doing malacha, we are recognizing that Hashem created the world. And that's Friday night. That's why in Neshmat Asur we have Vayichulu. The Shabbos of the day is that Hashem told us to keep Shabbos at Har Sinai. And that's the Torah's commandment for us to keep Shabbos. That's why we're keeping Shabbos now, is the Shabbos of the present. It's what was given at Har Sinai. And that's why what we say in Shmoneh Esrei is V'shamaru, which was said in the Aseret Dibros. And Mincha is Shabbos La'asad Lavai, Yom Shekulo Shabbos, a time when the entire world will be taken over with Shabbos. So those are the different tefillahs. They're also recognized in the Sudas that we eat. So the Suda Friday night, we make Kiddush. Kiddush is Vayichulu, we say. That's part of Deicha L'maaseh Bereishis. We remember that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world. It's a testimony to that. And the Friday night Suda is the Shabbos of recognizing HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world. The Shabbos during the day is about Matan Torah. And if you'll take a look at the Zemiras that we're saying during the day, a lot of them put their emphasis on Matan Torah. Very interesting. Naseh v'nishma amru kechan. There's a lot of Har Sinai references because that's the day meal. And Shalashuddis is La'asad Lavai. Shabbos builds to a crescendo. It goes up in Kedusha. So that by the time we get to Shalashuddis, we're already dealing with Yemos Mashiach. And therefore, the intimacy between us and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is captured by the Zemiros that we sing at Shalashuddis. Right? You did Nefesh. The love between us and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that closeness, that power. So there's no question that we're capturing a different level in our expression and how we approach it. Yeah. Shalashuddis is, the first two meals, as I already mentioned, you're definitely eating them because you're hungry. Shalashuddis, you're eating them because Hashem said so. So Shalashuddis is much more on an intimate level. So if you eat the Friday night Suda, that'll protect you from Chevli Mashiach. Because the Chevli Mashiach is necessary for us to go into a world that is in perfection. But if you recognize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world, then the job of Mashiach is just to bring the world back to what it was in Gan Eden. And so that's a unique kind of an expression. And that's the Suda. So if you eat Friday night, you'll be protected from Chevli Mashiach, from the suffering Mashiach. If you eat the day meal, you're protected from Gehenna. Why do we go to Gehenna? We go to Gehenna because we didn't keep our obligations in this world, and we need a kapar. If you keep the Torah, then you shouldn't have to have a problem with Gehenna. The Eish of Gehenna are not shoylet on the tzaddikim, because they are Eish in this world. There's no fire of Gehenna. Yeah, I've talked about this before. Yeah, what is Gehenna? Gehenna is coming to grips with decisions that you made during your lifetime here. It's a type of therapy. Some people who've been through therapy will tell you it's mamash Gehenna. Yeah. But what does that mean? So you've heard the mashal many times. They show you a movie your entire life. And you're watching it. And your parents and your grandparents and great-grandparents. And everybody's watching this movie of your life. And all the tzaddikim who ever lived, they're sitting there watching it. And the Chafetz Chaim is watching and he says, What's he doing on that screen there with the cards, the picture of the cards? It's called Solitaire. Don't worry. Eventually, he moves up to Minesweeper. Just keep watching, you know. Soon he gets into action videos. Just keep. Yeah, I've seen this before. And you're sitting there going, oh, my gosh, oh, my gosh. And when you think it can't get any worse, and they finally finish the movie, turns out it's a double feature. Now they show another film. It's What Your Life Could Have Been. And you see what you could have been doing all those times that you were wasting time in your life and doing bad things, what you could have been doing instead. All the times that you were big instead of small. All the times that you reached levels of greatness that you never reached because you were busy reaching levels of not greatness. Yeah. So this is the Gehenim. The Gehenim is the contrast between who you were and who you could have been. Tzadikim, they show them their movie, and they're thinking, oh, yeah, I could have done that better. I could have done this better. I could have done that better. When they're all done, they're like, oh, let's see the second one. And they say, that was the second one. You lived the best possible life. So you keep the Torah the way you're supposed to. There is no Gehenim. Because you lived your life the way you were supposed to. And that's why the second meal, which corresponds to Matan Torah, takes you there. And Shalashudis is Gog and Magog. Why? Because Shalashudis at the end of Shabbos, Shalashudis is this special relationship with Hashem. Says the Gemara in Brachos, why is the Kapitel Tehillim that talks about Avshalom rebellion next to the Kapitel that talks about Gog and Magog? Says the Gemara, because in case you think the nations of the world would never turn on their Father in heaven, yeah, in case that's what you think, I'll show you a case of a father, of a son who turned on his father, Avshalom. Went, chased after his father, go and kill him. Wipe him out, take over the Malchus. So it's possible. Which means the antidote for that is that closeness with the Kodesh Baruch Hu, where I recognize you did nefesh, av harachamon. Yeah, you're the beloved father, merciful father. Yeah. Have mercy on your son, on your beloved. We're sick with love for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the more we focus on that love, which is what Shalashudis is about, as I already mentioned, we're not eating it because we're hungry. We're eating it because we want to be close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So Shalashudis will protect us from that war at the end of time. And that's why the Maharal says, Shalashudis at the end of Shabbos, and this is the end of time, where we're getting ready for a world in perfection. And we stand up and say, we love HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we have that love for him, that concern for him, and that's all we want. Ana Hashem Refana, heal us, because we're sick with love for you. It's have mercy on your beloved son. This is what Yedid Nefesh is all about. It's all about that love for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And so when we eat Shalosh Shudas, which is, of course, called Shalosh Sudais, because that's Megala, that all of the meals we ate on Shabbos was only for the mitzvah of Shabbos. This is, we're Mekayim Shalosh Shudas when we eat Shalosh Shudas. And when we eat this and we sing to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, how much we only want to be close to him and have HaKadosh Baruch Hu in our lives, then that has the ability to allow us to have this closeness with Hashem, that love with Hashem, and that Shalashudis. So that's what we do. We have Shalashudis, and when we finish Shalashudis, of course, we daven Ma'ariv. We make Havdalah in Ma'ariv. If for any reason you have to do something before that, you say the Baruch HaMavdu and Kodesh L'chol, and you make Havdalah. And some people sing. My friend Nachum Amzel, I was by him for a Shabbos, and by Havdalah, he pulls out his guitar and starts playing his guitar afterwards, you know, left over from our old days of NCSY. NCSY, Havdalah was a major big deal. You know, you'd get up on a chair and everybody would sing, Hine kel Yeshua si And people are singing, they're very into it. And then somebody speaks, and then you make Havdalah, and then, you know, band strikes up, and they have Ruach, and Shabbos ends with this. You feel this transition. You know that you've gone, you know, Mekodesh L'chol. Now, we don't let go completely. That's the concept of Mevlal Malka, which we'll talk about next time. But this is how we go from Shalosh Shudis into Havdalah, and we make that separation, and we hold on to Shabbos. And there are certain people who mamish, like I say, they drag out the Havdalah because they don't want to let Shabbos go away. We know you'll be back next week, we know. You will be back because we love you so. So let us thank Hashem, who will bring Shabbos back again. I hope this has been helpful for people, for their Shmir Shabbos and their Onik Shabbos. And it's Hashem, we will mischazek ourselves in Shmir Shabbos. And this should be a Haganah and a Mogain for us and for all of Klal Yisrael and for all of the people who are never still fighting this war. All the time that we look and you see soldiers are lost and people are killed. And what a terrible, terrible situation we're in. So Shabbos should be a shmirah for us and for Klal Yisrael. And this brings us to the question answer portion of our program. We haven't had it for a while because we've been busy singing. But this is sponsored anonymously as a schus for Yeshua, for Klal Yisrael, and a refuah shlema for Rabbi Yalofsky, Besoch Shar Cholei Yisrael. That was by Anonymous. That's, of course, going back to when I just had some stents put in. I had 3 stents put in. It was supposed to be an hour and a half procedure. It went on for 4 hours. And, you know, the guy came and told my wife, wow, it went on for 4 hours. It was so difficult. And he was looking for sympathy. I was sitting there. First he went in through my hand, you know, it was, the wire is going in through your thing, etc. And first they have to numb it. It was terrible. And after like an hour of this, he says, no, we'll have to go through the leg. And I said, nope, that's it. I'm done. So he whispers to the nurse, knock him out. So they knocked me out for a little bit until they were able to go into my vein and my leg. It really took me a long time to snap back from it. So, you know. And a month later, we had a follow-up meeting, and he says, I'm sure I'll see you again. Okay, so that's, thank you so much for the sponsorship. And now let's get to our questions. Hi, Rabbi Yalofsky. How does one find the correct balance between making progress in one's learning versus chazara, reviewing one's learning? So, if you take a look at a page of Gemara, you'll see that on every daf, there are 4 long lines followed by thin lines. And very often there are long lines at the bottom again, but there's always those 4 lines. Why? Because the Braisa says that the way that Moshe Rabbeinu taught is first he taught it to Aaron, and then he brought another Levi, then he brought another Kohen. Anyway, he did it in such a way that everyone heard it 4 times. And then he would leave, and then Aaron would say it over, and then he would leave, and it went like this. 4 times, and this is very interesting, 4 times is not called learning. It's not called chazara. That's called learning. You have to learn something 4 times just to have learned it. And that's what Moshe Rabbeinu was trying to show you. You have to say it 4 times. So that's not even called chazara. So you have to go over it four times. That's basic. That's just the basic limud. Says the Gemara about Chazara, Eino Doima Me'e Pa'amim U'Me'e V'Chad Pa'amim. I heard a story I can't understand. I can't wrap my head around it, but this is the story I heard, that someone said to Rav Chaim Volozhin, I don't understand, what's the, you know, how is the Gra, you know, so exceptional? I was in Cheder with him, and I was as good as he was. I'd love to have found out who this guy was. I said, I was as good as the Gra. He was as good as the Gra, you know. The age of 9, he finished Zvachma Menachas on one night. You know, I was as good as the Gra, you know. So he says, you know the Gemara that says, Eino Doima Me'e Pa'amim U'Me'e V'Chad Pa'amim? You can't compare to learning something 100 times to 101 times. He says, sure. He says, did you believe the Gemara? He says, yeah. Says the Vilna Gaon, I didn't. I had to find out for myself. And so there's a lot of Chazara. Now, what does that mean? So here is a method that I was given when I first started in yeshiva. And that is, at the end of the day, assuming you're learning in yeshiva, at the end of the day, chaza whatever you did that day, even if it's just one time. The next day, chaza that and whatever you did the next day. And keep starting from the beginning and chazering over what you did and adding in what you've just done. Then you have to do it over. So that's the advice they gave me. Now, I, of course, who is the poster child for learning disabilities, and my picture is on there, I have dyslexia, I have ADD, I have focusing problems, and I have retention problems. I have all these different things. I could look at a Daf Gemara and it's out of focus. So I have to concentrate to be able to get into focus. And then I read it through, and it's a little difficult, obviously, because I'm reversing letters and switching things around. And after I get down to the bottom of the Amid, I forgot what I learned. So I have to do the whole thing over again. So for me, I have to chazer it a bunch of times just to remember what I just read. Because in the middle of that, by the way, my mind spaces out and I go someplace else, you know, until I can get myself back in. So the answer is there's two different things. I heard this B'Shem and Adam Gadol once. I think I remember who it was, but I'm not sure, so I don't want to say. They say, it's not hard to learn Torah Shebaal Peh. Right? First, you learn the Mishnah. Right? I didn't mean the Torah Shebaal Peh. To learn Torah Al Peh. By heart. He says, first you learn the Mishnah. And you look at the Rashi, make sure you get it down, and then read it over like, 50, 60 times. Then start the Gemara. And go through the first Shaklav Atarya, you know, go over it, learn over the Rashi, make sure you have it, and then read it over 50, 60 times. Then do the next one. So there are those people who are very careful to do a lot of chazara, and obviously you remember it. Somebody once said to the Rugged Shava that Reb Meir Simcha, the Ur Sameach, Reb Meir Simcha of Dvinsk, said he has a photographic memory. And he laughed. He says, no, he doesn't. He just chazes all the time. Yeah. This is what I heard when I was in yeshiva. And again, I never checked it out, but I heard it more than once. I assumed it was true. When you learn Gemara and there's a little Gilyan Shas over there by Rabbi Kiva Eger. So what I heard is those were the notes that he would jot down when he would chaz a Gemara 60 daf an hour. So as he was running through 60 daf an hour, he would have little ideas and he would jot them down on the side as little footnotes. So there is a big problem in yeshiva. Big problem. Everyone knows it. That people spend a lot of time in what one of my rebbeim used to refer to as la la lumdis land. You know, people love to go to lumdis land. It's like this, it's like that, there's a thing like make a chikir, do that. But at the end of the day, they have lost the forest for the trees. And that's why if you don't chazer it, you don't understand it. And that's why you can talk to the average yeshiva guy about a Gemara that he did 3 years ago. And he pulls out the Gemara and he says, oh yeah, we had a whole thing with this. I have Panay Yeshua written next to the Taisfus. There must have been a Panay Yeshua on this. I don't remember. Because they don't chazer. You don't chazer. You have to chazer it. To go over it and over it. And that's how you remember. And it's a very... So how much? So you have to know for yourself, what do I need? This is the important word. To make a kinyan on it. To say that I know it. When I was in high school, my Rebbe, Rebbe Whale, he asked me a question. He says, you know the Gemara? And I said, yeah. He says, say it over. I said, I can't say it over. He says, if you can't say it over, you don't know it. Vishinantim levanecha. Vishinantim means you have to know it well. Now, the Gemara says, that means that if you wake somebody up in the middle of the night and ask him if you can marry your sister, he has to say, you know, no. It means that much he knows. That's vishinantim. He said, vishinantim, you have to say it over and again. If I woke you up in the middle of the night and said, could you marry your sister? What would you say? I'd say, I don't have a sister. I have five brothers. Ah, if you had a sister. I don't know. My whole life would have been different. I don't know. How would we work out the rooms? You know, so I said, nah, you don't understand. I didn't know what he was talking about. So that's why it's got to be to the point where you feel like you have a kinyan on the material. So certain people have a tremendous memory. It's easier for them. But when you chazer it over, you always see new insight. Now, I've been teaching Shiurim and Mesillas Yesharim for over 30 years, and I can tell you, every time I look at the Mesillas Yesharim again, I get a little deeper insight into it. Yeah. So chazara itself is always something new that's waiting for you, and the more that you make a kinyan for it. I'll tell you one story. This guy was collecting money in England, and he was staying in certain people. Have rooms for people who are collecting. And then the next room was Tzvi Kushelevsky. He had off that day. And he was getting ready when he went back to give shir. And he was doing one of the bubbas. Bistama, he's done it since he was 8 years old, you know. And he's listening, you know, he'd hear through the wall. Tzvi is learning, you know, with a brand. And he reads the Gemara. And he reads the Rashi, and he reads the Tosfos slowly. And again, he reads the Gemara, reads the Rashi, reads the Tosfos. And again, he reads the Gemara, reads the Rashi, reads the Tosfos for 3 hours. So, okay, he also knows Shas. But if you want to prepare to give a shiur like that, and you want to make sure that you really have a tefisa, when I was learning Beretz Tzvi, we had this Milchamas Hashem we were supposed to be preparing. I couldn't make heads or tails out of it. I just couldn't make heads or tails out of it. So I said to Beretz Tzvi, I can't understand what he's talking about. He says, read it again. I said, I did it 5 times. He goes, 5 times? For Milchamas? Tell me you did it 60 times, 70 times, 80 times. Then tell me you don't understand it 5 times. Yes, sir, I said. Milchamas Hashem. Anyway, So that's the idea. How much time it takes you depends on your memory, depends on your attention, depends if you're preparing a shiur. But don't let what you have slip away. And that's what happens very often is people, you know, learn. And Robert Moses, when he was building all of the highways in New York City, so he was so bent on building it and pouring all the money into making new roads, he didn't leave money in the budget to maintain the roads he already had built, and they were falling into disrepair. So don't let the roads that you've already built develop potholes. And the next question by MN. What are the tefillah obligations of a mother of a young baby? What if she finds that between taking care of the baby and the rest of the house, she simply has no time? Then don't daven. It's an amazing thing. Women will tell you this. They stayed home on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur and took care of their children. And when they got old enough that their kids were big enough that they could go to shul, there'd always be some mother who brought their baby along to shul, and the baby would cry and disturb. And you know, she was like, why don't you stay home with your kid the way that I did? And I'll tell you better than that. There is a book called Rigshei Lev that was written by my friend Rabbi Nissel, in which he discusses women's tefillah. And in this, he brought a psak from Rav Scheinberg, who says, you know, I got a little baby, it wears me out. I'm taking care of him the whole time. I finally get him in for a nap. And I've got an hour. And I could daven, or I could put my feet up, make myself a coffee, and read one of the Jewish periodicals. What should I do? He says, for sure, put your feet up and have a coffee. Because Oisik b'mitzvah, potter b'mitzvah applies to the fact that women need to take care of themselves. How many husbands have had that experience when you have a bunch of little kids and you come home and your wife says, take the baby, I haven't gone to the bathroom all day. I have to go to the bathroom, but I can't leave the kids. You know, it's such a constant thing that you need time to catch your breath. And I'll tell you a disturbing story. I've told it before, and it's no less disturbing. And disturbing stories are the best ones because they urge you onward. This almana had a bunch of little kids, and they had literally no food. And someone gave her an egg. And she goes into her room and she shuts the door and she thinks, what am I going to do? Cut this up and give everybody a little piece of egg? It's not going to help anybody. So she thinks about it and she eats the egg herself. And the children who are hungry are outside knocking the door saying, mommy, mommy, what are you doing in there? And she said, I'm making you a mommy. Because I fly a lot. And as they always announce, when traveling with children, always put your mask on before helping children who are accompanying you. Because if you pass out, you're not going to be any good to anybody. So if the mother does not take time to take care of herself, she has the strength to take care of the children, accidents happen. Terrible things. I have a friend of mine who is a nurse, Kiva Ehrlich, and he called me once. He works in a place for kids who have serious brain damage, neurological damage, often from accidents. And there was this one kid who the mother put her in the bath and then ran to go and get something. And in the meantime, he was little. He managed to pull the water on and put just enough water in the tub for him to drown. It was only a little bit of water, but he fell over into the water, couldn't get up, and he wasn't able to breathe for whatever amount of time it was, and serious brain damage. You have to live with that for the rest of your life. We all know the stories of people who forgot kids in the car. Why? Because they're running over here, and they're running over here, and they're doing this, and, you know, take the time, have the cup of coffee, that's more important. Make sure that you put on your mask before helping those who are coming along with you. And that's it for this episode. If you want to find out more about the show, you can go to my website, rabbialowski.com. You can sign up for one of my online shiurim. We keep having people joining the tefillah shiur, and it's a lot of fun. I know it's helped my tefillah. I hope anyone else has gained from it. We have a Mesillas Yesharim for ladies, Monday evening, Jerusalem time, 1 o'clock in the afternoon, New York time. We have our Daf Yomi every morning in New York time, 7:15, and 2:15 Israel time. And you can sponsor an episode, sponsor a question and answer, sponsor a Parsha in 5. You'll be joining with my good friend, Meir Strobel, who sponsored all of the Parsha in 5 for a year, Mayor. Now, I'm appreciative, but I've mentioned this in the past. This whole podcast is his fault because he called me up once. It was before my former Talmidim, and give me Musser. And he says, you don't have anything on Torah Anytime. I said, listen, when people hire me and pay me to give a speech, so Torah Anytime films it and puts it up. He says, no, you should put something on it on a regular basis. You know, people want to hear you and people should do it. And that was one of the major impetuses for me to start this podcast. So Meir not only inspired it, but continues to keep it going, him and his Rebbetzin and his family, and it should be a tremendous chus for everybody. And that's it. Till next time, you can submit a question. So until then, I am Devin Orlovsky, and this has been the Rabbi Orlovsky Show.
It's the Rabbi Orlovsky Show. Torah and Simcha, ready to go. The Rabbi Orlovsky Show. Knowledge and wisdom will help you grow. Lots of fun in every episode. And we don't have to rhyme. No, we don't. It's the Rabbi Orlovsky Show on RabbiOrlovsky.com. Torah, anytime, YouTube, and more. It's the Rabbi Orlovsky Show. Torah and Simcha, ready to go. It's the Rabbi Orlovsky Show. Till next time, till we meet again. It's the Rabbi Orlovsky Show. It's the Rabbi Orlovsky Show. It's the Rabbi Orlovsky Show.